Reading this morning is taken from Luke chapter 10, 38 to 42. It can be found in the Pew Bibles, page 1042. Luke chapter 10, verses 38 to 42. At the home of Mary, of Martha and Mary. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary, who sat at the Lord's feet, listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but only one thing is needed. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." This is the word of the Lord.
Good morning. You might be aware, if you're regular, that we're doing a series on work, God and work. And I wonder, the title I've got this morning, Simon's given to me, is Work, Rest and Play. Can I ask you to help me, Simon, a second? Just stand up. I'm going to do a quiz, and I want to give a prize out, but I don't want any cheating. So first of all, don't shout out the answer, otherwise I'll get my school teacher wife to give you some lines. So it's like this, but you put your hand up. And the first three hands you see, Simon, provided they give the right answer, will get a prize. See, it goes like this. In the 1990s, a product was marketed. You got three?
Yes.
Two hands don't count, I think.
I don't know. He hasn't told me. No,
so what was the product that was being advertised as a blank a day helps you work, rest and play?
It was these three actually in a row. It sort of went travel.
There was hands over there. There were hands over there quickly.
I didn't see them.
Could you give... Because the answer... No, don't give too many. I want one back left at least. The answer... There's definitely Laura Austin had a hand up,
and yeah, I make sure I haven't got rid of
it. Was it Caroline Swallow had a hand? Wasn't you? No, somebody. Anyway.
No, wasn't you?
I may want those two. Okay. Now, Simon, don't go away because you're going to do. So yes, here's the answer: a Mars a day. Who seriously remembers that? It's just a catchphrase, isn't it? It stuck successfully. But it was so successful that last year, 2008, they reintroduced it. I missed it somehow. And Simon's going to show the video, the 30-second video of television adverts. Just thought you'd... Only linked, remotely linked. But it's a religious theme, so... That's my reason for you. I just made me laugh. That was filmed at St Luke's Church, just down the road. But obviously, if you eat a Mars bar, those of you who've got one, please don't eat them while the service continues, because we don't know what you might do next, and it's a bit worrying. Heather still got hers. That's good. That's good. Thanks, Simon. So, a couple of weeks ago, on this spot, Simon talked about work. He talked about how God had designed us, created us as human beings, to work. Part of our makeup, part of our character, and also said that everything we did in our lives, including work, God is interested in. So when you go off to work tomorrow, or in case of two people that are at work today, you know, God is interested in that, interested in what happens and how you feel and what goes on. But today we're going to look at something different. We're going to look at the work-life balance. Apparently this term was first used in the 1970s, that long ago. And it really means to find the balance between work and family. So it's your career, your personal prospects, your ambitions for employment, how much money you can make or something like that. And again, set against your family, your leisure, your recreation, your spiritual development. And the last 25 years, my research tells me, the last 25 years, for those of us who have been alive and working that long, has actually been one of the worst times for work. And there are three reasons for that. First of all is technology. When technology first came on the scene, people saying, it will save us time. It will make it easier. But what happens is that people take their laptops home. They have their blueberries on. Blueberries? Blackberries. Close. You see how technical I am. Their blackberries on all the time and so on. It's intruded into life. And it's made it harder. And secondly, there's the whole area of success. Everything is success motivated. We must get to the top. We must earn more money. We must have a bigger salary. We must rise up and have a title on our desk or on our door at work. These are real pressures. And more recent days, the infamous credit crunch or recession. I was speaking to a neighbour of mine who works for Disney Pixar. She's quite a bright lady, has a very important job working for that film company. And she said half of her office has been made redundant. And but the workload for the remaining half is exactly the same. So do the maths. Your workload is doubled. So there's pressure on time, pressure on expectation, pressure to be successful, pressure to have the latest technology, pressure to be available all the time. Now, as I understand it, the aim of promoting a work-life balance is to alleviate stress and to alleviate burnout by us taking time to rest, relax, and if you've got family, to have family quality time. If you're a single person, to have quality time with your friends. So that's the aim. Doesn't, however, always work out. This is a guy called Aaron Ross. Who's heard of him? Thankfully, nobody. Because the Times tells me that this man starts work every day at 6:15 a.m., has a kip in the afternoon on the office floor, and then works through to 9 p.m., when he meets his partner for dinner. Over dinner, they discuss work. And then he goes back to his email and he's on it till 1 o'clock in the morning. Now, I tell you that about Aaron Ross simply because he is chairman of the Work-Life Balance Trust. So this is not an easy thing to get into balance, is it? There's a struggle here. And I thank Simon for giving me that information. So that's the background to what we're saying. Paul read to us about Martha and about Mary. I'm not going to preach about that. I just want to refer back to it. See, this shows us that in New Testament times, the work-life balance was a question, was an issue. There were things not quite right. The Bible tells us that Martha was distracted. Literally, that means she was overly occupied and too busy. She was too busy, overly occupied with work, by all the preparations that she had to make. Whereas we see Jesus clearly stating about Mary, who was sitting at his feet, listening, receiving, drinking in what he was saying, that she had chosen the better part. She'd chosen what is best. Now, we could take some lessons from this, and I just want to touch on a couple of things very briefly. I don't want you to be in danger of making the story of Mary and Martha a matter of personality. In other words, you could be saying, well, I can't help it. I'm a Martha. I just do a lot of work and I have a lot of responsibilities. I haven't got time to rest. I haven't got time to relax. Jesus clearly said that Mary's position was better. She took a better role. The text of what we read infers to us that the home that Jesus went to was actually Martha. She was the owner of that home. And traditionally, culturally, she was responsible for providing food and drink and refreshment and a hospitable welcome for her guests. But if you just see the heart of Jesus, he's not fussed about what time the meal was or what sort of meal it was going to be. He wanted to engage with people. He wanted to talk to people. He wanted to share his message about the kingdom. So Martha was doing the right thing according to tradition. But according to Jesus, what Mary was doing was a better thing. And I think as a church, particularly a historic church, we always need to be aware of the danger of just doing things because they're tradition, when sometimes we need to drop the tradition and find something better. Not always, not every traditional thing is wrong, But sometimes we can get caught up like Martha, getting so busy maintaining something that doesn't need to be maintained. And we can be released to spending time listening to what Jesus has to say to us. So, let's move on. Because if there's a problem from New Testament times, it's actually a problem with work-life balance from the beginning. But God always has an answer. So I take you back to the creation story. Genesis chapter 2, verses 1 to 3 says this. Thus the heavens and earth were completed in all their vast array. By the seventh day, God had finished the work he'd been doing. So on the seventh day, he rested from all his work. And God blessed the seventh day and made it holy, because on it he rested from all the work of creating that he had done. So God's solution to work-life balance was, he worked for 6 days creating the world, as in the creation story. On the seventh day, he took a break. Then that was because God was saying, I'm really knackered. Can you imagine God saying, I'm really knackered or tired? Shouldn't say that word. Perhaps I got in trouble once for saying that word in school. So sorry, take it off the recording. God said, I'm really tired. I'm exhausted. No, God didn't feel that. He just was setting an example that having worked for 6 days, it was wise, it was healthy, it was good for us to take a break. And then this concept is repeated in the commandments that God gave to Moses, and Moses shared with the children of Israel. Exodus 20, verses 8 to 11 says this. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall do no work, neither you, nor your son, nor your daughter, your manservant, maidservant, animals, nor the alien, they come right at the end, nor the aliens right at your gates. For in 6 days the Lord made the heavens and the earth, the sea and all in them, but he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Same principle. Work 6 days, take a break, have a rest, be refreshed, be renewed, be recharged. So am I saying this morning that we should become Sabbath keepers as in the Old Testament? Well, my understanding of the Bible says no. I'm not asking you to become Sabbath keepers, because we need to understand what the Sabbath is. The Sabbath is a Jewish religious festival that is still kept by strict and conservative and Jews, traditional Jews these days. But it runs, I'm sure you knew this, but if you don't, it runs from sunset Friday to sunset Saturday. It's nothing to do with Sunday. It's a Friday night to Saturday night remembrance that the Jews keep to keep a day where those who keep them strictly do not do any work. But the early Christians worshipped on the first day of the week, the Sunday. They did so, it appears, to all accounts, because that was the day Jesus rose from the dead. So it's a logical thing to say that. It's the first day of the week. This is when we will worship. And I'd like you to see what Jesus actually said on a couple of occasions about the Sabbath. On the screen is just a part of it, but I'll read the whole thing to you. Going from that place, Jesus went into their synagogue, and a man with a shriveled hand was there. Looking for a reason to accuse Jesus, the Pharisees asked him, trick question, okay, is it lawful to heal on the Sabbath? Jesus said to them, if any of you have a sheep and it falls into a pit on the Sabbath, will you not take hold of it and get it out? The answer being, of course you will. How much more valuable is a man than a sheep? Therefore, it's lawful to do good on the Sabbath. And so just to really get up their noses, he said to the man, stretch out your hand. And the man stretched it out. He was completely healed. And the Pharisees were so incensed that they went out and plotted to kill him. And on another occasion, the Pharisees were having a go at Jesus. He said, on one Sabbath, Jesus was going through the grain fields and his disciples walked along. They just picked some heads of grain. I suspect it was almost like a random thing to do, just pick them, you know, just have a little chew of the grain. But the Pharisees were watching and they said, look, what you're doing is unlawful on the Sabbath. Don't you know that? And he answered, have you read what David did in the Old Testament when he and his companions were hungry and in need? In the days of Abiathar, the high priest, he entered the house of God and ate the consecrated bread, which is lawful only for priests to eat. And he gave some to his companions. And Jesus said to them, the Sabbath was made for man, not man for the Sabbath. The Sabbath is not a set of rules to lock us in. The concept of a day of rest is to set us free. I remember when I first came to Kingston in the 70s, I was having a river where I lived was a novel feature. So my family, and they were all, in fact, there was only two of them at that time, one of them hadn't even been born. Family were quite small. We went down by the river in Kingston, it was a lovely sunny day, and we passed the ice cream cellar. And my son Paul, who's now in his 40s, said to me, "Dad, can we have an ice cream?" And I said, "No, it's Sunday." And he said, "Why?" And I said, "I don't know why, but we don't do it on a Sunday." I realised now, looking back, I got myself locked in to this sort of, I was making Sabbath rules. Jesus didn't do that. He said the Sabbath's made for man. This idea of a rest, this idea of a break, this idea of not driving ourselves crazy with work and energy and activity all the time, is from God. It's meant to liberate us, not to imprison us. So what's all this about this morning? What's the message for us? Hopefully you're picking it up already, but let's try and hone in as we draw to a close. Many of you know that on the 1st of June, I go part-time. And Penny, stand up, Penny, for a moment, will you? Some people don't know who you are. This is Penny, and Penny's going to be the other half of the administration. Now, Penny doesn't know this, but this is what's going to greet her on the first morning. So I went through all these ones. Oh, I missed that. I'm sorry. Oh, that's Jumper now. That's the picture. I leave in my office on the Friday before like that. That's not Penny, actually. Look, it could be with short hair, but... No, actually, this was actually Glyn Macaulay's office the day he left. They're still trying to sort it out years later. If you don't know, Glyn Macaulay is a retired accountant who stands here sometimes. I've got time, because I just want to go back. Sorry. Not only did Jesus say some things, but Paul had some things to say about Sabbath and that sort of thing. He wrote this in Romans 14, 5-6. "One man considers one day more sacred than another. Another man considers every day alike. Each one should be fully convinced in his own mind." You could be listening to me and thinking, "No, I want to keep Sunday special." That's fine. Don't ask me to. I won't ask you not to. Be persuaded in your own mind what's the way to do it, and then do it. Again, it says in Colossians, Paul writing to the church there, says, "Therefore, do not anyone judge you by what you eat or drink, or with regard to a religious festival, a new moon celebration, or a Sabbath day." Don't judge each other by how you keep these things. The principle of taking a break is what's important, not exactly how you do it. Don't lay these burdens on other people. People are so good at putting rules on each other, aren't we? And we need not to do that. So, back to Penny at work. What's the point of all this? Well, I believe the point today is in the midst of the demands and the responsibilities and pressures of work that you face, that I face, we need to make sure that we take time off. For some, this will be Sunday. But if you think about it, Simon can't take Sunday off, can he? If he did, you'd stop paying him. Sylvester, I don't know what Sylvester hasn't done much today. He's got his collar on, so he's ready for action. But when he stands here, you know, it's part of his work. He's paid to do that. It's not part of my work. My work schedule doesn't include doing this. It's something like when Glyn speaks or Fiona speaks, because Fiona's an unpaid person, as you know, and Simon Brayton speaks. We're not paid to do that. It's a good idea, Simon, if we got a bit, isn't it, sometimes, you know? He's nodding, but we don't. But it's work. So, you know, they take Monday off. That is Sylvester and Simon. That's their day off. So we need to find what works best for us as a situation, as individuals. And can I just say to you, the day of rest, as far as I'm concerned, doesn't mean lying in bed all day, which I personally couldn't do, or watching hours and hours of daytime television. If you've watched hours and hours of daytime television, you're very sad. Because it's very sad, isn't it? How many attics can you clear out? How many sales of antiques can you go to? How many life-changing rooms can you make? How many grand designs can you design? You know, how many episodes of The Professionals and The Champions? I'm actually showing you I know quite a lot about daytime television. Just research. No, it means something else. It means walking or sailing or gardening or playing music or playing or watching sport. It means to rest, to reflect, and to recharge. See, some people may say, well, a day in the garden is hot and sweaty. You need a shower afterwards. Yeah, but it's different, isn't it? It's refreshing. It's renewing. It's not just doing nothing. It's being creative. But it's resting from what we do on a regular basis. So can I say to you this morning, if you don't take a day or work some way of getting rest into your life, you should. If you can't, because you're a carer, because you're a parent, because your demands on you are like 24/7, you need help, seriously. We need to find ways in the church to support one another, particularly in those times of crisis when people are just 24/7 caught up in something. If you won't take time off, you need a rebuke. You need telling off. So I'm telling you off now. Stop it. Behave yourself. Take a break. So don't be a Martha, all distracted and busy with stuff that's not that important, but be a Mary. And occasionally have a Mars bar. I want to give a Mars bar to, I said this a couple of weeks ago, but these two ladies are working. And this man's working. And shall I give Sylvester one?
Yes.
Shall I? He's working tonight. We're going to pray now, but we're going to do something different. We're going to pray for Simon. Because on Thursday morning, very early, Simon is going to the airport, getting on a plane with wings and engines, hopefully, and he's flying off to Peru with people from New Wine and Tear Fund for a, well, he's away 10 days, 8 of those days will be in Peru. And it's going to be work. It's not going to be a holiday. We've joked about, you know, having a nice 8-day holiday in Peru. But it's going to be work. It's going to be seeing projects. It's going to be meeting people who are poor and in need. It's just going to be meeting church leaders and seeing God at work in churches in another part of the world. And so if you could just come and stand in the middle, please. Just stand there. This is good. I can tell the vicar what to do. And no, that's fine. Don't take centre stage, honestly. So I'd just like one or two people. If Helen can hear in the creche, it's this time, Helen. She may not hear in the creche. So Peter Clark's not here, but could one or two people? Isabel Johns. Heather, you can join. Yeah, stop the recording, sorry.